What's up, guys?
Happy Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday today.
I have no idea.
If it's not, it should be, because it's going to be. It's going to be whatever I say.
Oh, man.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Yeah, man. Hey, welcome. If you guys have not heard us before, you guys can find Day $1.0 on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, obviously Facebook Live, wherever is best for you guys. Fun podcast today, Eli.
Yeah, man.
I like this dude almost better than I like you, and it's only been a short time that I've known this cat. So you gotta be a little. You better step up your game. Is all I'm saying. I'll try, man.
Who do we got?
Mark Patterson, like Madison, but Patterson. Out of Southern California. I'm gonna do him a huge disjustice if I give him his intro. And I always like when guests get to have a little bit of time to not gloat, but just respectably talk to everyone about what they do. And I think first person, they tend to speak it better. So I'm going to not do that and let Mark Patterson introduce himself and kind of let people in on what he's all about, man, and what he's doing. And we're going to get into some unique stuff about, one, how he approaches business, but secondly, how unique it is just in general to real estate specifically, and then what he's doing to combat this time right now. And then we're also going to dive into his Day $1.0 and how he's still approaching it. So Mark Patterson, what's up, man? Tell everybody hello and throw a little resume out there, man. They want to hear about you.
Yeah. So what's going on? Mark Patterson here in San Diego. I cover everything from LA South. So I've got a pretty good team and been doing the team thing for about 2 years. And I've been in real estate for a little bit more than four. I'm on my fifth year right now. And my plan this year is to sell a house a day. And we are on track for that. So 366, because I think it's a leap year this year. So 366, and I was a little nervous about the COVID-19 thing going on, but we're still crushing. We're having our best month ever. So
yeah,
it should be good.
That's awesome, man. And for everyone, if they're watching on Facebook Live, he does not develop porch lights. That's not like a side gig. That's a company I'm guessing that you run your team out of in San Diego. He's got to have some branding on there. So I had to throw a little stab at you. Obviously, us being Berkshire boys, we got to like throw a little shade your way and see what that's all about. So Porchlight, throw that out there.
I used to be Berkshire.
Actually. Did you really?
I don't know if I ever told you that.
Oh, yeah. No, man.
Hey, you know what that sounds like to me, Mark? It sounds like when I'm around and I meet a couple of people, I'm like, oh man, I was going to join the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, don't talk to me like that, shit. Mark. Don't tell me. No.
No, see, I was saying is I was going to throw shade at you guys and I left because it wasn't that
great. Yeah.
Hey, you know what, man? We're all about promoting it. No, it's awesome. Matter of fact, I love when we got folks on that are just something from a different realm, whether it be a different company or they have a different approach. You've got a different approach to your business and it's successful. What we love about this platform is, yes, we do like to kind of stay in our lane with what's worked for us and how we've crushed it. So when we don't have a guest on, this is kind of how we speak in regards to like, hey, here's what's working for us and here's where we found success. And we are subject matter experts within that lane. But what's fun about this platform is it's nice giving our listeners other options or other avenues to maybe if they feel some momentum somewhere, roll it out there.
Well, Mark, I think, before we get into, your real estate business, and I'm definitely curious how things are looking with, for your team with COVID and all that stuff that's going on. But keeping to the theme of the podcast, man, Day $1.0. I don't know if Will went over kind of our meaning behind that, but maybe we can hit that real quick and we're curious about yours.
Yeah. And just for listeners that maybe haven't tuned in before, or if you have tuned in before, but we haven't during a podcast you've listened to, we haven't dove into that. Day $1.0 is literal and it's, metaphorical, I guess you could say, but the literal sense was back at my story when at Day $1.0 podcast number one, we went over that in depth. So, but the synopsis is what was your literal, Day $1.0, what was your rock bottom? What was your epiphany? What was your starting point to make a change? Was it for me, Mark, I was sleeping in my buddy's mom's Y2K pantry with distilled water and Fig Newtons and canned soup. And look, man, if you're a stress eater at all, like, don't sleep in a pantry. I've said it before. That's the advice I'm going to give now. Don't sleep in a pantry. But mine was, I left a fitness company. I wanted to start something on my own. I decided it was going to be this. And I got rid of cars, significant other and daughter are living with their parents. I'm in this Y2K pantry and I hadn't even started real estate. I was still studying. Right. So it was a very literal, but there's been a lot of great transition from that friction I created for myself. But then, the piece that Eli brings to it is metaphorically, what do we do every single day to still make it feel and still act like it's Day $1.0. So opening that up to you, Mark, give some listeners some perspective on you.
Yes. So this actually, this whole podcast kind of resonates with me quite well, because I was someone who would constantly be traveling and, getting back, if I ever had money, I always went back to Dollar Zero, meaning I was broke all the time. So I would go work for Microsoft, work for them for 6 months. I'd never been fired from a job and I would quit and I'd go travel somewhere. So I went to Kenya and then I'd come back and I'd work for someone and then I'd quit and I'd go travel somewhere else. So I actually quit my last job, went to South America for 6 months, traveled around all over down South America. And then I said, hey, I'm just going to keep this summer thing going on because it was actually summer down there and it was winter back home. So I said, I'm going to move to Southern California and I'm going to become a real estate agent. And everyone was like, yeah, right. You know, you're never going to be able to stick with that. You got to put in a lot more grind to be in LA or San Diego to do this. So I was like, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to move there. I don't know anyone in San Diego. So I moved to San Diego on a moped and an air mattress. And I moved into an area off of Craigslist that they told me was North Park, which is a cool, really hip area. Well, this was like North Park adjacent by like 5 miles. But the description in the ad said North Park. So I was
probably a realtor that posted that damn thing, man.
Yeah. And started getting my real estate license. My brother told me, good luck, you'll never make it. Mm-hmm. So after he said that, and I had one other person tell me, oh, wow, another real estate agent. Like basically you're a dime a dozen. And after those two people told me that, I said, I'm going to freaking just crush this. So that was my day one Dollar Zero was I was San Diego. I had a moped. Once I got licensed, I used to park my moped around the corner and then go and meet the clients. So they didn't know that I wasn't driving a car.
See, he was telling me that the other day, man. It's awesome. Something I want to hit on a little bit, man. So what I'm getting from you is you were definitely living life, having a good time. A lot of people, including myself, who didn't get to travel like that. My overseas experiences were a little bit different than yours, so I'm a little jealous. So fuck you, Mark. I'm sure everyone wants to say that about, I work for 6 months, make enough money to travel. Yeah, fuck you, Mark. Whatever this guy's about.
But, dude, you figured it out, man. So shit.
Yeah, he figured out. But what I want to know so much about is, so obviously looking back on it, when you decided to like, all right, hey, I'm going to do something, you started realizing everyone probably enjoyed you. You're a super nice guy, super charismatic, but I bet there was a moment, I could be wrong, where you realize, oh, no one takes me serious though. Like they all see me in a certain light of lighthearted or having fun or traveling and living life per se, but nobody's taking me serious. So what was it about that? One, if that's true, I don't want to speak for you, but secondly, what was it about actually committing to something, and not only committing, but now you're at scale and we're going to get to where you're at here in a little while, but what was it inside of you? What were the growing pains inside of that commitment or that transition that made it rough? But what qualities did you get, you know, learn or exercise that allowed you to stay committed and scale?
Yeah. So the biggest thing was, I think I look younger. I get told I look younger. I was approaching 30. And I was like, well, shit. I'm approaching 30 and I don't have shit together.
Yeah.
So that honestly was like the part where I was like, okay, I've always been able to get hired by top companies, but I've never stayed there longer than 6 months. Now it's fun and games, but if you're, you know, in your 40s and you're still doing that, something's going to happen. You're not going to have any retirement. Nothing's going to be set up.
Right.
So it was really just that idea that if I obviously had something, because I could always get a job, I went to great schools, I graduated from college, all the stuff you're supposed to do. But I wasn't necessarily a fuck up like some people would think. I was just someone who bounced around a lot. And really, I kept thinking like, God, I have all this potential in my head, but I can't figure out what it is. And it was always the fact that any job I ever had, I mastered it so quickly and I was bored. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have ever worked in the corporate world. They give you a task and that task should take about a week. And they give you a 6 month project timeline. And you're like, well, shit, what do I do with the rest of my time?
Right. And so if you've got ideas to scale or get it better, they're like, yeah, thanks, Mark.
Don't care.
Or you've got managers that might be threatened by your ability to maybe have their position one day. It's, you know, the corporate world or even just chain of commands in the military. There is some of that stigma there. Not everyone, but there is some of that to where if you're overly proficient, it's really hard to like get your voice heard, to get people proactive to move you up the ranks. And even just being an overachiever, it's almost like you have to sandbag and just turn it in when they expect it and just kind of like do the dance, play by the rules. But I could definitely understand why you're getting bored.
And Mark, have you had any entrepreneurial tendencies prior to that, like getting into corporate world? Had you, you know, as a kid, did you do anything entrepreneurial or?
Yeah. So my parents actually, my entire family owns all their businesses. When I went soft, myself and my uncle were the only two people that ever worked for another company out of my entire extended family.
Wow.
So that entrepreneurial spirit in myself, I was, you know, it's ingrained. My parents own their own business. My brothers both own their own businesses. And so I've always wanted to create. I always looked at something as an opportunity, whereas some people look at it as like fear and unknown. I just thought like, man, working for a corporation is fear. mm-hmm. working on my own and being in charge of my own shit. That's amazing.
We but talk about that a lot.
Companies.
Yeah, man. We.
Yeah, I started a dog collar company. I started a t-shirt company.
What were you,
I did a bunch of stuff.
Were you doing that while you were at corporate?
No, I can't remember my resume.
In between. Yeah, yeah.
I've extended my dates on my resume so many times to not make it look.
And awesome. They're not reading it anyway. Like, this guy was in college. Great. Yeah, have a job.
Yeah.
Why is there like these gaps? Like, what did you do all the time?
And you and I are very similar. Our 20s were very different. I was, just being in the Marine Corps and what we did there, very different. However, we're very similar in the sense of, you and I are quote unquote official entrepreneurs once we're into our 30s versus like Chucklehead over here. He was like selling lemonade, selling shoelaces, like doing all kinds of weird shit. He's
shit
like,
I'm not proud of.
Right. He's that guy that was born.
Yeah.
But he owned his own business. He was a personal trainer. He was definitely doing a lot more of that a lot younger than you and I. However, you went to college, you gained a lot of experience. And this is part of my story that I want to get out to a lot of entrepreneurs is definitely, hey, there's this stigma of do you either finish high school, if that, right? And then you're that's it. And then you're an entrepreneur or you're a college kid. It's one or the other. I also graduated from college, right? Like I did the Marine Corps stuff. And there was a lot of experiences I had that applied and helped me once I became an entrepreneur. And it started opening my eyes of like, hey, you don't have to be this 19-year-old born entrepreneur. You've got like, we can be entrepreneurs forever, right? Like you're looking at people well into their 80s that still run their companies. So if you're going to do that forever, it's okay if you don't necessarily know quite what you want to do, like go dive into life and figure out some things. So is there some stuff in regards to your travel, your college, the jobs that you did have experience wise that applied to helping you become successful once you decided to become an official entrepreneur?
Yeah. So I mean, definitely around that question. I think like every little life experience, I don't think anything in college, particularly in one course, but the life experience I studied abroad in Italy or, you know, just traveling the world so much, I think that allows you to connect to people. So in real estate world, man, if I talk to someone, they're like, oh yeah, Kilimanjaro. I'm like, oh, I've climbed Kilimanjaro. They're like, oh, you have?
You would never be my realtor. Like, you're a fucking one-upper. I'm like the people's champion now. I'm speaking for all the people who like are so envious of this dude's travels.
But it doesn't cost much to go climb Kilimanjaro. It's
very
like
true.
You freaking eat like it's called Unami, I think is what the name is. It's like mush mashed potatoes. I lived in a barn in Kenya and volunteered at an orphanage and that paid for my way to climb Kilimanjaro. So it's not like, I never had anything glamorous.
Yeah.
It was just that I did it. Did Machu Picchu. I've been to 72 or so countries. So traveling, I think, is something huge that people can relate to. And people always think it's a lot harder than it is. Same with being an entrepreneur. Being an entrepreneur to me is easy. Like not being an entrepreneur, like I said, is the hard thing. You just got to get over it. I think people have fear of travel. People have fear of unknown, but.
Well, and a lot of people, man, you're right. And a lot of people during this COVID, pandemic, right. I've heard from a lot, like, man, I left the police world and that was a little unique. Believe it or not, there were some guys that were frustrated at me or mad and I don't want to get into it, but they didn't care for my decision to venture off into that fitness company and some other things. And some of the guys were totally cool with it. But me leaving a paycheck or health benefits, it baffled them. They were looking at me like, hey, you're an idiot. Come here. Let me big brother you. And I'm like, no. I literally, man, I only told a couple of folks that I was leaving. And it wasn't to be rude. And then, by the way, I left on April Fool's. It was a baller. Whole cool story behind
great
that.
Idea.
But I had to, like, just kind of quiet the noise around me after a couple of people knew. And they were good friends. They weren't going to pass any rumors, but very quickly from just the wide responses I was getting from different people, whether it was anger, frustration, maybe they wanted to as well, but couldn't. So they were mad at me for it. I don't know. I'm speculating. People wondering like where my money's going to come from and different stuff. And they see the like regular paycheck and health benefits. It's like, oh man, it's like secure. And it's like, no, it's not secure. No more secure than like me creating my own future. Like I want to rely on myself. I want to shoulder that myself more than you. And it's interesting. Like I wrote a post this morning, Mark, you have not liked it yet. It's on my Facebook. So I expect you to go read this now. But it's a picture of my son. But I talked about like, there's this thing going on right now. And it's very relevant for us entrepreneurs. He's like reading. That's awesome. It's very relevant for us entrepreneurs every day. But a lot of people are like very frazzled right now, stressed, and it's the unknown. And we talked about this the other day. Oh, it's the unknown. And we don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And people are frustrated. People are wanting to be motivational. And I'm like, hey, listen to me. Tomorrow being unknown is no more different than 6 months ago's tomorrow being unknown.
Right.
A family member could die in a car accident tomorrow. They could die from a sudden health issue tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You could. Or this could be your first day of being reborn and just having an epiphany or choosing to focus on what you can control and make a difference. But I think for a lot of us entrepreneurs that are figuring out ways to get creative, right? Like our podcast, right? For an example, it's in person. We love the whole Joe Rogan style. Let's be in person. Let's invite somebody to our undisclosed, super awesome location. And then because we also wanted to fly them in, let's go have some beers. Let's get to know the people that are on the podcast. Well, that ain't happening right now. So we adapt. We figure out a way to have these screen shares and make sure it's still adequate. But I think for us entrepreneurs, we haven't had a safety net for a long time. So this pandemic, it's a little bit of a bigger obstacle, but an obstacle as such that we've dealt with for a long time, knowing that every one of our days are unknown. I think it's smoke and mirrors. I think a lot of people are walking through their careers or their life right now blinded. And all of a sudden this pandemic, it really just sheds light.
Yeah, it exposed.
You ever watch like a cool action movie, Mark, and they got like lasers through the whole house, but then they like put smoke into it so you can see all the lasers. Then somebody does like flips and like dodges all the lasers. But until they throw the smoke on it, you can't see the lasers, right? I feel like that's people walking through life. This pandemic just kind of threw smoke into the room, and you can see all these lasers, but it's like, hey, the reality of it is there is no tomorrow that's known, right?
Like, it's true.
Anything you can speak to that on, Mark? Like, what about in California? Are people reacting a little bit of the same, or are people super curious as into why you're actually thriving right now, not taking a dip?
I freaking love stuff like this. Not saying like what it's doing to the economy or doing to people in lives. I just love like turmoil. Like whenever I have turmoil in my life,
thriving chaos.
I'm like ready. Let's go. Let's do this. And it's funny. It's like the only thing that's different to me right now is that you mean that I don't have to sit here and talk face to face to a buyer or a seller in order to list their house. Wait, so I just get to send them videos. Sweet. Yeah. So like today I'm going to go video a horse property. I have like a scratch. I climbed a fence the other day. Cause I'm telling a horse.
Dude,
property
that is one of the worst scratches I've ever seen, bro. Are you okay?
No, it's not bad. Are you saying that as a Marine? Like, cause this is I'm a softie.
Hey, you said it, not me.
But I like fell over a horse fence, but I'm going to go sell this guy a horse property. So I'm just going to go there and video it for him. Yep. How does anything change? I'm going to have a mask. I'm going to have gloves. Yep. I'm going to be the only person there. It's vacant. Yep.
Yeah.
Any home buyer or seller right now, people still have to buy and sell houses. So why are you going to be that person that's going to sit there in fear when you could be there and someone that can actually help? Because some of your buyers or sellers may be fearful. Mm-hmm. And if you're a freaking solid rock, you can see their perceptions change. They're just like, whoa, this guy is not fazed at all by this. So
that's leadership. Right. And if we boil down leadership, and this is something that we're big on speaking to realtors about, you are a leader at some point in all of this, whether you're a team owner, team leader or not. You're going to be a leader to your kiddos. You're going to be a leader to your clients. And when we talk about fear, right, being very general right now, a lot of fear comes down to just unknown, right? Like even when people start finding out what it entails, they're less fearful and more encouraged to just get through it, right? Even when you talk about like a surgery, like if someone's a cancer patient or whatever it may be, there's a lot of fear around the unknown. But once it's been diagnosed and then the doctor gives a direction of how we're going to attack it and what our chances are if we attack it the right way, there's still a little bit of fear, but it's actually there's a lot more motivation and more, okay, let's band together. Let's stick close to our family member. Let's get through this because now it's actually starting versus that unknown. So it's the same thing here. Like it or not, right? Real estate is critical. And there are circumstances. We have personal clients right now where it's job changes, financial changes, whatever it may be due to COVID or not. They still have to live their life and they still have to do it. So we still have to lead and make sure that we can sell and buy homes, be safe, be adequate. But you're right, Mark, like you have to figure out a way to kind of like take the lead a little bit and show some confidence and show some clients like, hey, this is still more than possible. And one thing that we are all benefiting from right now is technology. Imagine if technology had not been where it's at right now, how well we could perform, whether people wanted us to perform or not, like to be a lot more risk to it. So just getting creative and doing that and then just shedding some light. And Mark, in regards to like some of your clients, are you getting a lot of questions? Are people starting to ask a little bit more or are they losing some faith? And are you giving a lot of reminders out there? Are you putting out fires? What does it look like for you out there in California?
Yes. So really it's, we had 8 I want to say probably like four actual cancellations, but then we had maybe four buyers that were like, oh, I'm just going to wait it out. So I wouldn't trust them as cancellations, because I got to check in with my team to see if those four ever pulled the gun on a transaction. So, or pulled the trigger on a transaction. The other four canceled. One had to do some layoffs. And so there's things like that where if people are losing their job, you know, I can't really battle that objection, Hitler. But the fact of like fear of unknown, well, here's what you just got to provide with facts and about, you know, home inventory, you know, the rate that you're locked in at is 3.5%, the likelihood that you'll get a 3.5% again. Like, we had a military guy, he was zero down 2.75%. And he wanted to back out. And I'm like,
and he's military.
Dude, hey, you're no skin in the game.
Yeah. Like his income isn't going anywhere. He's military. And I think that's a lot. I mean, especially as a leader, right? Like, if someone's going to be scared, like, okay, let's not try to like ignore fear. Let's not talk about fear, but let's try to validate the fear.
Right.
Because what we don't want to have is fear due to like fictitious circumstances or a bunch of propaganda that's out there that might be in the direction of scary. But in reality, it's like, hey, we're kind of scared over the, you know, over Bigfoot right now.
And it's not like, going off the information that we have now, like, we know now, at least in Colorado, I'm sure it is where you're at too in San Diego, property values are holding. We're still getting multiple offers. There's still buyers that need to buy. The market is still good right now. So it's like, I'd rather go with what we know now versus, hey, maybe we hold off a month or two and see what happens. I'm like, because we don't know what 2 months of our economy like this is going to be like. But we know it's good now. Is it still flying out in San Diego? Are homes still flying off?
Yeah, multiple offers on properties. And it's on that price point. You know, in every price point, there's a range. Like, if you're between like 3 and 7, you're going to have multiple offers. Even between like 7 and 1.2 is going to be like our more like higher end stuff. You still sometimes will get multiple offers on those things. Mm. I find that maybe duplexes and triplexes, those multi-units for investors, have been kind of slower. Investors have maybe said, hey, we don't have to buy a place right now. So they don't. But for the actual consumer, we have 39 closings this month, and that's the most we've ever sold. The most we had previously was 31.
Yeah.
So we're at 39 plus those others that we had canceled. Like, we are killing it. So people are still moving and shaking, and we're getting offers accepted. But there is definitely a multiple offer situation.
Well, and you're in California. Like, I was, you know, like, when I was in the Marine Corps, the majority of my Marine Corps career was at Camp Pendleton, and like I-5, the 405, I don't think people want to drive in California anyway, man. I think people might be a little bit more open to some of the technology that they're being forced to use right now versus maybe some of the other states, maybe some of the flyover states, you know, that just have a little bit more easeability and access to go see and feel versus like California, man. Like, you do not want to be on I-5. No, it's hard.
Well, especially in North County.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've been doing video and like just video consultations. So anyone that has a client, the best video send through that I found is Facebook Messenger. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be Facebook friends to be friends on Facebook Messenger. So you can put someone's phone number in Facebook Messenger and usually find them.
Oh, really?
And send them video through that way. And the videos get sent so much higher quality, and they don't like pause. Like, sometimes through text, it doesn't, unless you're like iPhone to iPhone, it's really easy. Like an iPhone to an Android can sometimes mess up the video.
So that's
minute video.
Are you iPhone or Android, Mark?
Oh God.
iPhone. Hell yeah. My man. I was hoping so, man.
My man. No.
Oh, God.
When you
go, oh, God. Dude, I know. Don't even ask me that.
I feel like Androids are like, I don't want to say anything offensive.
Oh, no. Listen, I'll say it. I think everyone that has a damn Android. No, not everyone. Everyone I've met that has an Android. And Gene, if you're listening, our buddy Gene, he's got an Android. I feel like they're so pretentious, and they want to tell me how much better and more technologically sound that these Androids are. And I go, great. Guess what? That's like telling me you have this way better, more sophisticated language that nobody fucking speaks. You got this phone that does not talk to the masses, so it's so cool, okay? Like, you got a rocket with no astronauts flying that fucking thing. And you know they eat pears. They're pretentious. They want to go out of their way to show you their damn Android. And it's always people that know how to, like, probably write code and build computers. I get it. You're smarter. Yeah. That phone's probably better.
I feel like iPhones are classier.
Dude, 100%.
And classier is like iPhone.
Timeless. Well, and just usability, man. Like, when we have clients, like, you got to be able to have some usability. But you threw a nugget out there, a super good nugget, when you talked about Facebook Messenger and sending videos and communicating with your clients, that you don't have to be friends. Now, when you do that video, are you going live on Facebook Messenger, or do you just record a video and then upload it through Messenger?
Record videos, and go slower than you think. Test it out, because it does, if you're going through a house and you're moving, in video, it moves a lot faster. Mm. So slow down and go through and do it as a test on your own home if you're not familiar with it, and just get really familiar just doing video after video and explaining things and showing the flooring and showing the ceilings as if they were there. When you're out front of the house, show them the shitty neighbors next door. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's a really bad house next door, be like, hey, yep, there's a car in the front yard.
Yeah.
Don't ignore that, and then yep, have them in escrow and then have them show up to that.
And if you have a business page, you can send them a message on Facebook Messenger from your business page. And what a great way to just communicate with your clients. Like, if you don't want them, like for me, I have no problem having people on my personal Facebook, yeah, but you're going to get capped at 5,000. Now, I'm super good looking, Mark. I'm super popular. I hit 5,000 in a day, right? Yeah. Right. So, but if you do have a business page, or maybe you're just not comfortable having people on your personal, you can send those videos to your Facebook business page. But it's great because now, right, you can invite them to like your page. Now they're going to be absorbing some of your content that's on your business page, and you're getting people from real life to start interacting with you, mm-hmm, on social media, mm-hmm, which is another plus. That's a great nugget, Mark. And I don't want to get too far off. Yep, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, anyone who's not having clients on their personal page, I think is a big disservice to yourself for getting referrals. Too.
Yeah.
I actually got rid of an agent for not wanting to be on social media. I said, well, see you later.
Oh, I love it, man.
Like,
I love
to be on social media because, and that personal connection, my clients, like, not saying like they love me, but they love me because, yeah, they go and look at my page. They're like, oh my gosh, I saw you were doing this, or I saw you doing that. I'm not going to post all that on my business page as well. Right. And they're not going to check your business page all the time.
You're, yeah, right. You're, yeah, right.
They have to like type in your business page to find you.
And yep, that's me. I'm on my personal page. I actually delete people I don't know from the years to allow more space, yeah, for my clients. Mm-hmm. The reason why I was saying, hey, if you're more comfortable, because we have had a couple scares with females out here when they're at an open, yeah, house, or they take a client and just some weird shit happens. So from the female perspective, like, look, dude, that scratch on your arm, that's legit. You can take it, bro. You're tough. I'm tough. Guys like you and I
know.
We're I'm tough.
Like closed clients, like clients that you sold a home to.
Got it. Okay.
Then I'll, yeah, like, yeah, I'm on my Facebook.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. So maybe you're interacting through Facebook Messenger. And then if you're comfortable enough, you transition them. But I agree, Mark. And I want to get into your business model too, because we've all kind of grown very similar as far as organically and not spending a ton, you know, we don't spend any money, but not spending money on leads, but actually growing relationships, getting in your community, leveraging. So I want to kind of go back to, all right, cool. You're off your moped. You get like an 88 Malibu or something and get started. And then now you're doing real estate. Where did it go? Like, how did it look for you as far as individual agent to having having sex and then having some success, right? Going from individual agent to, hey, I want to own a team. And then why do you feel like you wanted to have a team? What could you provide for your team? What's your business model wrapped around? Would you mind kind of painting that picture for our, yeah, listeners too?
So like you said, with sex, I would have done anything for a sale in the beginning. So that is correct. But I was a poor agent. So so I started as a solo agent. I was in an office, traditional brokerage. It was not Berkshire Hathaway, so I won't trash talk that. And I was just sitting there and I was listening to people talk, and they're like, yeah, you know, I'm selling 24 houses a year. And I was like, holy shit, 24 houses a year, like two a month. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
And I was just brand new. Started in August. And by December, I had sold 9. And while I was there, actually, I was trying to figure this out because I kept hearing people talk about their sales. And I was just sitting at the community desk because I didn't have an office. So I started Googling coaching companies. And I Googled Tom Ferry because that was one of the top people, apparently. I didn't, mm-hmm, know who the heck he was. And I spent $300 on this course called By Design. And the By Design course was just like preloaded YouTube videos that I just watched. And they were old school, but they taught me a lot of stuff. And they taught me, and I basically ran with those things and I just started killing it. Well, they called me for coaching right away. And they're like, hey, you should sign up for coaching. I was like, well, shit, I couldn't even afford the $300 online course. How am I going to afford $600 a month? So I said, okay, do it. So I signed up. And that's where it really just exploded my business, because I then started meeting agents that 24 deals a year was like crap. Mm-hmm. So that was like the bottom of the barrel agents. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea all these people were out there. So I started meeting, and all of a sudden, just sharing information like through this podcast. If anything I say, if most of the stuff I say is probably crap, but if you learn one thing, implement that one thing and do that every single time you learn from a podcast or a seminar or a webinar, and just take those and implement. And that's what I did. I went from being a solo agent to being a buyer's agent on a team to starting a team with someone. And from there, that's how my team Porchlight was born.
What were some of those things real quick that you started doing that gave you that initial success? You signed up for Tom Ferry.
You got the sex part.
Yeah. Beyond the sex. What were some of those things that started giving you some success?
So I was actually like having a buyer consult. Like, do you have a formal buyer consult where you take the buyer through the process?
Now, so glad you said that.
I'm not someone that's going to sit the person down because I don't have an attention span longer than like 5 minutes. So a person across from me probably isn't either. But while we're looking at houses, I'll bring a clipboard and I'll go through everything. And obviously we already talked on the phone or we met in an open house. So I have some idea. But if they said 3-bed, 2-baths, I'm going to ask them, hey, why 3 bedrooms? Mm-hmm. Like, is it 100%. An office? Because you're probably approved for only something that can afford a 2-bedroom. So do you have to have a 3-bedroom? Like, do you have 6 kids?
But that two beds and a loft might work.
Or maybe the loft, you know, and just understanding it. Like when you're going through the MLS, and I'm sure it's very similar for you out in California. If you get too specific on a search, you're reliant on people actually putting every single thing keyword wise, you know, information wise on that home versus finding it other ways. But you're right, man. Like I think, and Eli and I, we've got a buyer presentation, a listing presentation, and it's a whole, and it's not even just a presentation. I call it a buyer experience. It starts off with a buyer presentation, but then there's things that we present.
I'm freaking buyer experience. I'm writing that down.
Love it, bro.
I'm implement.
That's right.
I'm loving it. And the reason why I called it an experience is because that buyer presentation is where we kind of prep them for battle, right? Like we get in their information of what, you know, their wants and their needs and everything about it. But then we also cover every phase of, hey, what is pre-approved versus pre-qualified, depending on where their knowledge base is at, right? Like if you've bought 19 homes, no, I'm not going to get in there and insult you. But we start as basic as needed, and we go over, hey, what's pre-qualified? What's pre-approved? What are the differences? What is, hey, once we are and we start sending you emails, one of them is going to be a drip campaign. Some of them are going to be individual because I'm actually looking at homes for you. We have a network of off-market homes through other realtors that we know that might be great for you. I'm going to be sending you those individually. So what does it look like when you're looking at homes online? And then, hey, once we start looking at homes in person, what's your role, buyer? I don't need you to tell me what you're going to pay for it, okay? Nope. I don't need you to tell me everything wrong with the house because you're the inspector now. No, I need you to do the one thing that I can't, an appraiser person can't, an inspector cannot do, and that's fall in love with a home. And then when we talk about falling in love with a home, hey, is it your forever home or is this a business decision and we got to get a lot of your needs taken care of, but maybe this is your first time home and we got to get you a place that's got great equity, great uprise in it because maybe your taste is probably your third home, right? Like your taste is that $1 million home, but maybe right now we're at a 450 or a 550. Hey, but how do we make that okay to a buyer? Well, we explain how to build wealth through real estate and we get them to understand that, hey, if you can put aside some of these wants and go to some of your needs, and I'm introducing you to a neighborhood like in Colorado by Ann Schutz campus that at one point was 16% appreciation. If I can start wrapping your head around the business side, you can let go of some of your desires or some of your high tastes and understand that there's a progression here and we can build some wealth through homeownership, right? Depending on the client, we have that conversation. But main thing is we got to fall in love with that home for what it is for us. Is it a business decision? It's our first time home? Or is it our forever home? We've built our wealth. We're in our mid-50s, mid-40s, whatever it is, right? Identifying that client and then speaking to them, but giving them a role when we're out looking at home. So you're not telling me my fucking job. You don't know the market. I know the market. But if you're doing that to me, I haven't done my job. So then we go over, you know, hey, what is submitting an offer, right? What does that look like? We go over, you know, if our offer gets accepted, are we married to the house? No. Why? We go over times that we're able to fall out of contract. We go over everything. That's like our buyer presentation, right? And then the buyer experience is going to be, as each one of these phases starts surfacing, right, as we get to them, we're managing their emotions, and we are reintegrating some of the reminders and some of the education that we reference back, right? And the biggest reason why we want to do that buyer presentation first is because you're not emotional right now, which means you're gonna retain a lot of what I say. That way, when we do get to submitting an offer and we're implementing, you know, an appraisal gap, an escalation clause, when we start implementing tools, You're not just thinking emotionally and thinking that I'm trying to convince you to buy something. You remember the education when you were not emotional about, hey, if there's a competitive situation right now in a house, you're understanding why we're implementing these tools. So when I re-explain them to you and I prepare you, you know, if we have to put this on an offer, you understand the game plan still. You're not just emotional, also trying to hear what I have to say. It's just a bad experience. So I love that buyer prezo. I love going through every phase, but then I also love that experience of we got to manage emotions and we got to continue to educate and transition them through every single phase. And I'm guessing you can concur. That's what creates referrals. That experience that people get that makes, hey, that guy's a professional.
I'm so glad that was your answer, man, because so many people, him and I talk about this all the time. So many people want to start with, how do I get clients? you need to start with, how do I do such a fucking badass job with the clients that I do get that it just generates more business? Because the reality is getting clients isn't necessarily that hard. It's kicking ass on the ones that you do get. Yep. To get repeat business from
and
them.
We all know how we know that, because Mark, I'm sure you're a way bigger deal than we are. I'm sure you have had people come to you that already had a shitty agent prior to you, and you're like, great.
All the time.
Yeah. All the
I
time.
Love when they meet, I love when they come into an open house. My biggest line, so I loved your off-market one. When people come into an open house, I'll have a binder that says off-market inventory. Now, if you're a new agent, do you have any off-market inventory?
No.
Yes, you do. You do have off-market inventory. You got FSBOs, you got expireds.
Make me moves. I see where you're going. I got it.
Yeah. So everyone's got off-market inventory. So you put that onto a binder, and then you would have a thing that says, please do not give out, in red marker on it. So it looks important.
It is important.
You do the little NLP thing. So this is a bill, so this is not a binder, but I'd be like, well, here, I'll be like this. So if this is sitting on the counter, it says, please do not give out.
Top secret.
Like,
you need a top secret stamp on that, bro.
Yeah.
I'm like, so your agent sent you here? Be like, are you only looking at properties on the MLS, or is your agent showing you off-market properties as well?
Yeah.
And then you have, it says like off-market inventory, please don't give out. Like, well, I can't really give this to you because you have an agent, but you really should consider having someone that's going to show you something, because right now it's so competitive, and obviously different times we can't do open houses, but it's so competitive right now. You got to be looking at on market and off market. We put so many of our clients into off market houses.
Absolutely.
It would be awful that you're always competing for that house. Right. And they're like, yeah.
Dude, he sounds like an R&B song trying to hit on some girl. Like, yeah, girl.
Your man does this,
your man doesn't throw out flowers every night? Oh, that's too bad you got a man, because this is what I do.
That's awesome.
You got to put your business cards all around the house, too. So if they show up with their agent and you do that spiel to someone and they're over here listening to you,
because
clients will be listening to you while you're talking to someone else, you got to put your cards in the bathroom so that the girl or the guy can go to the bathroom without their agent, grab your card, put it in their pocket, and then they call you.
He sounds like a Chris Brown. Dude, like,
hey, I couldn't ask for your information because I was with my agent.
But the bottom line is,
I sold a girl 3 houses from that. She grabbed my card and she was there with her agent. Like, she didn't have a relationship. She was probably just like, called somebody to go see a house.
Well, here's the bottom line, man. If you're providing value and people choose to contact you, so listeners that are going through and wondering like, oh, is there some gray area between conduct between agents and agents? Of course there is. And I can't go walk up to a door with a sign in the yard and tell that seller they should be working with me. No, you can't do that, right? No. And same thing, like if people have an agent, you can't go, you know, out of your way to go talk to some folks. But if you're conducting an open house or some type of training or online webinar, if a client of someone else's reaches out to you, that's different, because they're pursuing you. So you are. So in regards to what Mark's speaking about, providing value and exposing the value that you give, they can reach out to you. And listen to me, man, like if people, especially agents in this profession, if you're not creating ways to just be valuable, like Eli and I, first and foremost, we're going to do everything we can for our clients. We go to open houses with them. We don't just send them to open houses without us. Like, we nurture that situation because we understand that, you know, the experience, how important that is to people that are purchasing a home. We understand the value to our word. So guys like you don't bother me at all, because we're making sure that we're taking care of things. Now, if you're not taking care of home, maybe you don't want your husband or wife going out, hanging out with other people because they're better. I don't know, but that's for you to answer. But what a great point as far as building value.
Yeah. And you're just making it easy for them to contact you. Which I like, because a lot of times they may want to
go after anyone's clients. Yeah.
Right. But you're making it easy for them to do so. No, that's awesome, man. So open houses, getting the coaching. I want to talk about that a little bit, man. How did that, how did that help your business? Was it just having someone keeping you accountable, giving you fresh ideas? What was that for you?
It's the networking. So it's not only having your coach hold you accountable. Your coach is never probably going to tell you something where you're just like, wow, that was mind blowing. Mm-hmm. But how did I go from 5 years ago starting real estate, or 4.5 years ago starting real estate, to selling 9 houses to selling 366 homes?
Right.
Did I do that all because I freaking researched it online? No. Like, I met people like you guys. I met people all around the country. I've got friends, like my friends are the number one agents in Florida. My other friend's the number one agent in Massachusetts. One of the top agents in Colorado Springs is one of my best friends. I've got agents all over the country, and I'm just constantly texting and chatting with them. This morning alone, so it's, what is it, noon now? I've chatted with probably 30 to 40 agents today via text, just like little check-ins from places all over the country.
Mm-hmm. But it's super freaking huge.
It's always that way.
And it's these little things, like the two main things that you've given out today was that Facebook Messenger, how you don't have to be friends, but how the quality of video and how you can go through and still connect with your clients and do those for them. That's huge. Even if you're just previewing homes, Or if you find, like, maybe you're out with a different client and one of the people that's in your pipeline is looking for something specific, you go show a client, you're like, oh man, this would be great for so-and-so. Cool. Whenever you're done with that client and they're getting ready to go meet you at the next house, take some camera footage, take some video right there and just say, hey, Kev, was thinking about you, man. I know you guys are going to wait a little while. Hey, no sweat. By the way, I know you guys were interested in new builds, or hey, I know we haven't talked about new builds, but look what they're building right now. And hey, these prices all finished are right in this range. But listen, bottom line, was thinking about you. Thought you might enjoy the video. Boom. It's finding ways.
Well, I do it on social media all the time anyway. Yeah. So I would then text my client and be like, hey, I was out showing this house. And I think it actually might be good for you too. Go look at my Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's already on my Instagram stories. Because you want to be posting on Instagram stories all the time. And there's only so much freaking content you can come up with. Like, just when you go and show a house, you don't have to be on the screen. Just go through Instagram Live or just Instagram stories it out and post it out to them. And then when you just send it to your other client.
100%. And if it's on your phone, you have the content now. So if there are some folks that are not on Instagram or they're not big on store, whatever it is, and you have to send it to them via text message, via email, via Facebook Messenger, do whatever you have to do to adhere to your clients. But the bottom line is when you're thinking of them and you have reasons to reach out and touch them without just asking if they're going to buy today, but building value. And sometimes people are just so appreciative that you remember what they want or what they need or what they're looking for, and it sparks a thought in you, and you took time to throw some content their way of value. They love it. The other one that you spoke about was, you know, your ability to do the off-market stuff. So when you're at open houses, just having inventory from for sale by owners. A lot of realtors, man, the only time they're talking to for sale by owners is when they're trying to just snake their way into a listing, right? Like, you know, they go, and I get it. It's all good. It's all good. However, there's other angles and there's other ways to bring value to for sale by owners and off-market stuff. We have a large fan base, well, not friend base of other realtors that have a ton of stuff off-market. We have investor friends that we do deals with. They also do deals outside of us that let us know when they have something popping up. So we have several off-market opportunities for our clients. If you're not building that value, or if you don't have that, here's the deal. If you're a newer agent, you have access to for sale by owner. So what a great nugget. And by the way, anything you're doing at open houses, you can create video content online right now on how to build value to some of the people in your sphere. So those are huge, man. I want to ask you too, now that you know you guys are where you're at, what are the main things that you're implementing, you know, to your team right now as far as what's making you guys successful? Are they going out? Are they finding ways to get deals themselves? Are you able to be an anchor for them and create some buyer or listing opportunities through relationships as you've grown? Is it a hybrid? What does that model look like for you?
So a lot of my agents are newer. So I'm a newer agent. So therefore I want to have newer agents. I don't want to bring on an agent that's been an agent for 10 years. And me and you, I'm like, how do you do this?
You're going to have a lot to undo there too.
I probably wouldn't know how.
So it's either that or they're going to go, listen, Mark, I've been around for 25 years. Yeah. We do mailers. Like, and on the mailers, got to have your hair. And you got to have a lot of hairspray. Right? Like, it's going to be one or the other, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it.
And you got to fax your offers.
Yeah.
I wonder how those agents are doing during COVID.
God, bro. Dude. What's your team structure look like right now?
Yeah, we have, I would say probably right now we have 18. I have like 3 people wanting to join, so I got to figure out a time to onboard them today. By the way, I'm the person who does basically all the admin. So there's no admin.
Jesus.
We have transaction coordinator.
Yeah.
So the transaction coordinator handles it from, you know, pending to closing and does all the paperwork stuff. But the agents are truly trained, like, and there's 18 of them. To when they go on the inspection, they do their visual inspection in California. We have to have that kind of stuff. When you go on a listing appointment, you bring the lockbox, like just bring the lockbox in and set it on the kitchen counter. And then they're like, what's that? And you're like, well, that's what I'm going to put on your house when I list your home. Like, well, you don't need an admin to go put it on the next day. Like, just bring it with you. Yeah, like, thinking of ways to eliminate trips.
Yep.
So like one of my agents, she'll sell 52 houses this year and she has zero admin. And so for lead wise, some of it's my leads, some of it are theirs. When they're newer, like I was saying, I like newer agents. A lot of the leads are mine, like realtor.com, Zillow, all that stuff. I do have that route. And that's where a lot of our leads for our team come from, or a lot of military connections with bases, because military families for us is one, it's awesome. We're helping out military families, which by the way, thank you for your service.
Oh, you're welcome, Mark.
And the other thing
see how he likes me better than you, Eli? I've always got that card on you. I already guessed, man. Right there in my sleeve. Right, I'll be your huckleberry.
I'm just trying to get your San Diego first. But having that, like having those agents that are young and driven, they go after expired. It's like, there's like little pockets, because now I have a few agents, like some go after expired. It's like me personally, I'm not someone who's going to go after expired. Like, this is not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to coach that person on going after expireds. I'm really focused on like military buyers and sellers, helping out people relocate. That's what I like doing. And so, you know, we all have our own little thing, but mostly the stuff they get is from me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you've also got some other relationships through like the financial world that you've been able to capitalize. Is there anything you can speak on in regards to that? I think, and that's where I think you're extremely unique. And what you're about to say, it's not like we haven't heard it before. This idea has been out there. However, you've really done a great job at solidifying those relationships. Obviously being professional, doing a great job because they keep you around. And then obviously a goal there with those families is creating referrals from that, creating experience from them. But can you speak on the relationships that you have through the financial world that also funnels a lot of business for you?
Yes. So when you go to conferences, what's the first thing most people do?
I talk shit and bitch because I'm there.
He does. Exchange business cards or something.
I'm like, hey, well, who's going to teach me anything here?
A lot of people will go and see which seminars they're going to go to.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, last thing I want to freaking go do is go to class.
Yeah.
I don't go to seminars. So I go to conferences all the freaking time. I go to the booths. I bullshit with the people who are in charge of the booth. Mm. I find out who their boss is. And then I get it. It's called the whale. Like, I don't know why it's called the whale, but my coach was like, go after whales. Mm-hmm. Like big money.
Yep.
So who's in charge of Quicken Loans for your area? Go freaking find out and become best damn friends with them and comment on their social media, on their Instagram, follow them on LinkedIn, and just become friends with them over and over and over again. Who's in charge of Mello Homes? Who's in charge of, you know, Navy Fed, USAA, Veterans United? Who are all these people in charge of? And where do their buyers go once they get them pre-approved? Hmm.
Yeah, they might not have a realtor, right? And something that I want to disclose that I think you can speak on as well, because this is where people have to be very careful. You have to remember, like, what Mark is talking about, because I do this with my circle. We're going to have Brian Shantosh on today, extraordinary Marine. I earn his relationship. That guy, him and I speak a couple times a year. He's a great advocate, you know, for myself. He's a great mentor when I need something like that. But every time him and I are not talking, I'm fucking grinding to make sure that every ounce, every minute I took from him gets applied to whatever I'm doing, and I can come back, you know, and show him like what I'm doing to show him, hey, your time into me is valuable. So what I want people to be very careful with right now is, oh, so just go on and like people's shit and start kissing ass and sucking up. And hey, aren't you doing that with a motive? Hey, listen to me. If you have a product of value and if you're good at what you do and if you want to share that with people, you've got to earn that relationship. So it's not just the likes. It's not just commenting on their stuff. It's Mark actually wanting to engage with these people because they are valuable and he wants to bring a value to them, because the value Mark has is he's done a great job at building relationships, executing contracts, taking clients through a process to where he's got something to speak on. So when he is earning these relationships, he actually has something of value. He's not this new guy with no deals going through buying popsicles from Quicken Loans owner's fucking daughter on the corner. That's not how this works. No. So can you speak on some
they
of the
care about the closing? Yeah. So they like me as a person, cause I think I'm fun. Like when I go to these conferences with these people, I'll be the first one to be like, let's go out, let's go have fun. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't close,
you want to go out with me, Mark?
They want to give two shits.
You want to drink with a Marine?
Party.
Virtually. We'll Zoom clients, later.
All my clients are Navy SEALs, surprisingly. I'm like the biggest wuss. I don't know how I ended up with all these Navy SEAL clients.
Listen to me.
You've never met a guy like me, Mark. Person, but you have to close.
Yeah, it's true.
They're all in it for money. It's business.
Well, it's sales. So here's the deal. You got to like one another, especially when you're doing business. But you're right, Mark. Because we're sales, no matter how nice you are, no matter how fancy, or no matter how awesome your business model sounds, if it doesn't convert, it just doesn't matter, right? We've seen quarterbacks in the NFL that were super good looking, super great for PR, super great for the brand, quote unquote, that couldn't throw a fucking touchdown or read a cover two appropriately and execute an offense. Guess what? Their pretty ass is gone, right? Brady Quinn, dude, awesome.
I don't know what any of that means.
Eli doesn't watch football, but... Apparently, I'm speaking to myself. Yeah.
Okay, good. Fuck. I got it.
But you're right.
Cover two, right, Mark?
I think no matter what, is people do have to like you. They have to think you're professional. They have to think, hey, why am I choosing Mark and his team over other realtors in California to work with, to partner with? Because, we like him. We think he's professional. He's helping military families. He's in it for the right reasons. And he gets it done. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, he gets it done.
That's the most important thing.
Yep.
But they need conversion.
Yep.
If you're not converting and you're not providing value, here's the other thing is I always say, like, if you ever look in a forum or like in a Facebook group where people are asking questions, I always tell people, don't be an asshole, somebody who just asks all the time. And I'm like, hey, I'll sit on the phone with you and explain this process. Mm-hmm. But like you just said about, you know, you're chatting with the next guy, is like, you implement. Like if this person takes an hour of my time and doesn't implement, I will never talk to you again.
And yeah, they're watching.
Don't waste my time.
I promise you, anyone that is of value that you want to reach out to, that's going to coach you, mentor you. And I've even asked Tosh, both Tosh, he's got, you know, he does his own consulting business. And I'm like, hey man, like, what does it cost to like, you know, you coaching people? I've kind of like tiptoed around that before. And he's like, shut up. We're all good. Just call me, dude. Like, but I promise you, anyone worth seeking some coaching from, what, no matter how far they are in their ranks, if they're still trying to achieve some of their own stuff, if they're at the top of whatever you're learning, they might not say anything to you, but I promise you they're watching. And if you're not implementing or taking the time, like if you're not coachable, if you're not implementing what they're giving you to try, and if it doesn't work, at least be able to speak to why it wasn't working and then come at it from a different angle and being proactive about the knowledge that you're getting. But they're watching you. And if you're not going to do it, I promise you, all of a sudden, those phone calls you make, they stop answering. Right? And it's like you said, Mark.
That's
like,
the same for my team.
Yeah.
Yep.
Agents on my team, they ask me how to do something, and then they're not turning in their check-in sheet with me. I'll just stop answering them. They'll slowly get the memo like, oh shit, if I don't put in effort, he's not going to respond to me.
You've only got so much time.
Take my time.
You're right. You've only got so much time, and Eli and I can speak to this. You've only got so much time. You want to give it to people that are going to go out and take advantage of what you're giving them. And here's the deal. The bottom line is, if you're not going to implement what I say because you don't like it or you don't think it's going to work or it's not for you, hey, that is so okay. Maybe I'm not the leader for you, right? Like you can boil this down to podcasts. Some people love listening to Grant Cardone. Some people don't. Maybe he's not for you. Hey, cool. But then just stop sitting there listening to it and find someone that is your cup of tea that you can learn from. It's the same thing in person when you're having a, you know, someone that's your leader. If they're not for you, you've got to be very respectful in the fact of like, and be assertive and move in a different direction where, hey, maybe this other person is going to say the same exact thing Mark did, but for some weird reason, I receive it better over here than I did over there. All good. But remember, guys, and I could go on for days about entitlement and different stuff nowadays. Understand, just as much as you can be cutthroat like that and not use a leader and go in a different direction, if you're looking for a team or whatever you call it, guess what? There's that other side of the coin. Leaders can be very assertive and go, hey, you know what? It's very clear to me. I'm not the leader for you because you're not putting in that effort or you're not accountable. Maybe you're not in the right place in your life. Maybe I'm not the right leader. For whatever reason, these things coming together are not working. Hey, we're not doing this.
Yep.
But for some reason, when the leader does that, it's looked at so differently than if someone leaves a leader.
Right.
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 Hey, leaders don't owe you anything. Right. If they're going to sign up and be okay to be your leader, then yes, they're obligated to lead you and to provide every resource to conduct business. But if you're not going to apply, because remember, you're there to learn. Oh, well, Mark, like I can't have Mark teach me. He's like, all right, cool, man. Here's these daily checklists. Here's how this works here. And I go, Mark, I don't like the whole checklist thing, you know, like, fuck, man. Like, it's like, hey, Will, you asked me for help. I've got to lead you. How I lead. I've got to lead you where I'm successful.
Yep.
If this type of systematic approach to something doesn't work for you and you need some other cowboy who runs and guns, hey, cool, man. I got a friend, right? His name, right? Like, but you've got, if you're asking, if you're seeking that guidance and be open-minded, you might not realize that you might actually be really good at what this guy is trying to teach you. You're just so early on in the process. Be a little bit more forgiving of the phase you're in when you're seeking guidance and you're learning something new. Give yourself a little bit more forgiveness to allow yourself to give more effort to where it's needed
and try
to really realize if you're going to be successful there or not.
Mark,
don't go after like the freaking person that's like 3 years ahead of you. Go after the person that's like 6 months ahead of you.
Yeah.
I like that.
Tackle what they're doing. Then go up there, then tackle the next person. And pretty soon you're freaking just like climbing the ladder. You're going after the next person. You look back and you're like, holy shit, how am I going to close this many houses?
Yeah, you're right. Not everybody has to speak to Tony Robbins, right? Like, I'm sure there's plenty of people that he's coached or plenty of people, you know, that are within that chain of command that are more than capable of helping. You're like people like, hey, you don't need Gary Keller in real estate to talk to you about something. Like, there's some things that you can get done at a basic and intermediate level that can take you a lot further. First. 100%.
Yeah, I would rather have like a meeting with one of the top agents in San Diego, one of the top teams, then have a meeting with Tony Robbins.
Right.
Dude, 100%.
Like, what am I going to get out of Tony Robbins?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to say he'd rather have a meeting with
me. Big fucking hand in your face. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I'll go after the agent that's a little bit more ahead of me so that I can become fat, you know.
When did you find, Mark, that was a good transition? When were you feeling that from solo agent to, okay, I can start doing a team and I can start doing it better than I've seen other teams done?
Can I guess that before you give the answer?
Let's hear it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to feel like the relationships he started growing, whether it's through the financial world, capitalizing on leads and having systems work, he was getting more business than he could handle. And he started realizing he's got to maybe add some folks, but he had something to give them. And if he could just teach them how he did the business, he's got enough business to give them to actually execute. And then he scaled from there.
How was that?
Yep. Pretty next good. Question. I would say the number wise was when I did 24 deals.
Okay.
I felt 24. I was top 1% in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Felt that was enough to say, hey, look, I kind of know what I'm doing.
Yep.
If you're not selling houses and you don't want to sell homes, that's not the way to start a team. Mm-hmm. So really focus on once you have the systems in play and realize when you add someone, you're going to add five and maybe one's going to stay. Mm-hmm. So when you're brand new, you don't know, you don't have the things in play. Now, when I add one, it's very rare that they ever would leave because my systems are all just like solid.
Well, and you're probably asking different questions when they're coming in. You know what questions to ask. You know the type of people that aren't going to click. You're probably filtering a lot out.
100%, right? The people that you're choosing to allow to be on the team are probably a better fit based off your experience. And over time, you're just better at your craft. You're better within the scopes that you focus on, and you're probably a better leader for them in the same. And the bigger that team gets, it takes a little while before you start having some sway. But the number that you're at right now, it's a really good number, you know, like in the Marine Corps, especially in the infantry. Squad level was huge, and that's 15 to 16 Marines, and you've got team leaders in there, and you've got the one squad leader, but there was a lot of culture and pride and commitment to a squad, you know, and I feel like, Mark, you're just above that level with 18, but you're right at that level where you have enough people that start creating, like, this synergy together, and they actually start carrying a lot of the culture, and they actually become the engine behind it, right? Like when you look at any prideful thing, right? Like any prideful brand, Raider fans, whatever it is, if you look at it, it's the body of people that carry the culture.
Or Matt.
Yeah, I know you fucking guys.
I get the Raiders reference.
What do you guys Banana Republic? Like what?
I know what Raiders fans.
All right, so you know Raiders fans. Yeah. Whether you like the culture or not, if you actually look at it for what it is, the people, right, that share the blue collar 9-to-5 working my ass off, but I come every day and enjoy a Raider game or whatever it is. The people start adopting whatever culture was initially giving, and then the people become a bigger engine, right, than the actual person who's leading it. So, Mark, you're at that level of where if people are there for the right reasons and they're really they embody the culture, the commitment, the due diligence to service for people. If you have enough of them really start to adopt that, it's bleeding through your entire company. And believe it or not, that becomes the engine in itself. Does that make sense? So that's a fun place.
I mean, like, that's why it's so important to eliminate anyone who's negative right away.
Cancer. You got to dig that cancer out.
I don't care how much production you do. You're out.
Yeah.
Good.
You talk shit about someone or you say one thing that's where I'm not okay with. See you later.
Good. He's fucking cutthroat.
I like it, man.
He's
I like it.
He's all business.
I like it.
Don't fuck with my business.
Yeah, man.
Porch Light San Diego sounds so like just welcoming and like, no, fuck you.
Someone was saying like something negative about COVID, and they're like, oh, well, what's going to happen to our business? Da, da, da. My response in the group thread was, stop posting negative shit. Go out and sell a fucking house.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, and again,
everyone,
man,
everyone started liking it. So, you know,
I hope you can share this with your, maybe you can sit down with your team and go over and maybe we can find the snippet for you where I was talking about, you know, like with my experience with what we did in the Marine Corps and just going, we have a podcast where we talked about training scared, right? And just preparing for combat, preparing like you're in school, just boot camp and hearing stories from drill instructors that just got back from OIF-1 and going through School of Infantry and being with your first unit and just merely even just training for you know, what we thought the inevitable was or being a cop, man, and being on the streets. I'm starting to shed some light on like, hey, guys, we are in no more control of tomorrow than it's ever been. This whole COVID thing, like, yes, there are some different circumstances. I'm not going to just ignore and act like, you know, being in quarantine is, you know, notional. No, it's real. I get it. However, there are still ways to adapt, right? Improvise, adapt, and overcome these obstacles to really separate yourself from the pack. And if you guys do that as a team, If you're doing it as an individual, you're going to separate yourself from everyone who chose not, and they succumb to their fears, and your business will not only grow through this, it will grow well past this. But it's something that's so relevant to me because I didn't, for so long, I didn't really know what my tomorrow was. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, hey, guys, don't allow the media, don't allow yourself, don't allow a pandemic that's real, alter the fact and making you think that like, oh, now we don't know what tomorrow looks like. Mm-hmm. No, motherfucker. Yeah. You don't ever know what tomorrow's going to be. Right. We just have some different circumstances that make us have to sell houses differently and help people in a different way. But it's, you know, so I hope you can share that with your team as far as like, hey, guys, we've never had control of tomorrow, right? We've always had to adapt. Yep. We just got fucking complacent because we haven't had a weather change in a little while, right? So we got a little complacent and it's now we got to tighten these screws a little bit and get a little bit more proactive and creative. But it's just shedding light on what's mm-hmm. always been, man. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to know what? I asked my agents, I was like, are any of you guys nervous? And they're like, no. And I was like, you know, what you guys are all new agents. They've only experienced the great economy of real estate. Just like you go out and the freaking house sells. It's super easy. And they're like, well, you told us like always have plan B, like always have savings, always have reserves. Like one of the guys on my team, he's a new agent. He's been an agent for 12 months. He has $250,000 in reserves.
Awesome. Awesome.
His monthly bills are like $2,500.
Yep.
So he's like, dude, I can go on forever and I'll be fine.
Yeah. That guy could party a little bit more.
Planning.
How many times could you climb that mountain with 250K, Mark?
Oh, shit, I don't know. I didn't pay for it. I fundraised with my family, actually.
That's awesome, man. Awesome. So, and, hey, we don't want to keep you too long. I know we're just over an hour right now. But, you know, not only with this pandemic going on, but just, you know, we saw this in real estate. You know, when I first became a broker, they were like, oh, there's 60,000 realtors in Colorado. Like, look, doesn't matter how many of them are. If you're good enough, you're going to rise to the top. You have to figure out how to separate, you know, yourself from the pack. But if there's something you can give these listeners, whether they're going to grow a team or they're growing themselves right now and they understand, okay, cool, I'm all in it. I've got to get creative. You know, I definitely need to understand that this pandemic, it's changed some things, but I should be doing all I can to control my business with where in the areas I can control and preparing myself for the future, what's something that they could be doing right now, either as a team owner or as an individual during this time and maybe have a little bit more time, what could they be doing to prepare themselves now for what's to come?
I think always like tracking and measuring. So understanding where your ROI is from, how much things cost and return is. I think that's very important all the time, but especially now, because we have a little bit more time to sit there and look at it and then educate yourself. So, you know, people are scared. Your buyers and sellers are nervous right now. Educate your buyers and sellers with facts. Like, look at what's happening in China. Look at what's happening here. And you can safely say everything is going to be okay. But if you're not solid and you don't have that down and you don't have the information, you're going to sound like a freaking wishy-washy salesperson. So practice your skills, role play all the time, understand the value of having a buyer consult, a listing consultation, or what do we call it now? A buyer experience.
Yeah.
So all that good stuff, make sure you have it down. There's no excuse that you shouldn't walk out of this pandemic like freaking ready to go.
Mm-hmm. And just preparing your clients for battle.
Through it, but right. If you need a break. Yeah, just keep going.
Well, and if you don't, sorry, let me cut you off. And if you don't have a lot of clients right now, or maybe if you are newer and you never had a lot of clients to begin with, and like, man, 2 months after starting, you're hitting this, you know, I think something that was important that Mark spoke about, you know, that you can do now is reach out to Mark, reach out to other people that are experienced in this industry and ask them, hey, what are you guys doing? Or how are you adjusting to these times? How are you handling clients? That way, if you do get a couple mm-hmm. of clients right now or just after this, you've at least had some conversations and you've heard from people that are in your world, you know, that are dealing with the same thing. So you at least have some perspective before you speak. And definitely when you're going to talk to your clients and allow them to understand, hey, it's going to be okay, you got to justify what okay means. You really got to know your client because, you know, what's okay for me was selling shit and sleeping in a pantry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some people, like Mark, who's traveling the world, he might be like, hey, bro, that is not okay. Wherever you said...
I'm not going back to a moped.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, wherever you said, like, hey, we're going to be okay, if okay means I might have to drive a moped again one day, you and I are not seeing eye to eye on what okay is. So please clearly define that. And I think Mark can agree, if you're going to speak in those terms, Give some content prior to saying it's going to be okay. Just lay out circumstances, lay out what you're seeing right now, prepare them for as many possibilities that are possible, and then maybe close it out with, hey, based off of all of this in our conversation, mm-hmm. hey, ultimately, everything's going to be okay. But don't maybe don't start with that. Really try to prep, you know, for your client's situation. And you got to you got to make sure that you understand their personal circumstances and how that incorporates to the market. You can't just talk market.
Yeah. What ask questions.
And that's something I'm big on, Mark. Ask when people say, hey, Will, what's the market like right now? I don't know. What market are you talking about? Oh, you know, a seller's market. Well, I don't know. Who's selling? You've got to dive into their person, you know, their circumstances.
Is it a duplex? Is it a single family residence? Is it next to a military base? Yeah. Is it,
What are their personal financial situation? Yeah. What's their personal motivation to sell? Are they buying after that? Are they, do they want top dollar? Do they need top dollar because they refinance four times? You don't know. You really got to get specific to your, get specific to your client and then show them how the market applies to them. Super important.
One of the biggest things I learned from you, Mark, and that I hope our listeners take from this, man, is just how proactive you are, how quick you are to just take the jump, go talk to people, go meet people, put yourself out there and be vulnerable. But all that is backed by performance and education and knowledge and actually being able to back your own shit up.
And you weren't afraid to be new.
Yeah, not afraid to be new, man.
Even now, like, man, you've accomplished what some will never accomplish. You could stop selling right now. And people in 30 years still won't sell as many homes as you've sold, right? So, and you're humble with that, which is great. But
I can't stop selling now. I have a mortgage.
Kid, don't get me started, Mark. Don't make me call you out on that mortgage.
Hey, speaking of mortgage, why don't you show our listeners, man, or our viewers, man,
before you get to his
that
house
view you got over there.
Yeah, before you get to all that right, super right. depressing view for
yeah,
us.
Yeah,
yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, you're still at a point where no matter how much experience you've had, you're still like, hey, you know what? I'm still a 4-year guy. I still want people that are here. I don't, you know, hey, I respect my, you know, the seniors enough that are ahead of me that if they don't want to be a part of this team, hey, cool. I'm not going to recruit them. And you're still trying to make it, like, you're just okay to be new and you know who you should be leading right now. But what I also love is you don't shy away from how much newer agents can accomplish when you guys are working together cohesively, right? You don't need a Marine with 10 years of experience to go onto his first deployment and kick ass. He just needs to have the right training. He needs to buy into his leadership and buy into the systems and then go dive in and dedicate himself to it. And we're big in that in the Marine Corps, small unit leadership and younger guys, man, there's a lot of benefit to it. And you're reciprocating that very well, man, as far as where you guys are at.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that, and having that training, I video all my training so that anytime I need to reference something, I can send my agent to that video versus explaining everything over and over again, like a broken record.
I
so
like that.
Anytime, if you're building a team, record everything you do, or if you have a team, have a training portal.
But Mark, maybe sometimes people just want to be heard. Maybe they don't really want your video. They just want you to hear them. What about that?
Go find someone else. I listen to my team. Oh. I'm nice.
Mark, I can't wait to coach you as a leader, bro. I feel it. I feel like there's some tools I've got for you.
But there's a place, the right place and the right time to ask a question, and usually we'll have it on the huddle so that everyone can learn from it. So it's 100%. Not just a one-off question.
Yeah.
If it's pressing, dude, you message me or text me and you're on my team, I respond back.
Yeah. And people also have to understand, like, sometimes when we're fearful or we're stressed, we fall back on old habits. And old habits might be venting, but it's not necessarily productive. And there's a time to vent, and sometimes people just want to be heard. I'm one of them, and that's okay. But you really have to, as an individual, you really have to dive in on, is that going to be productive? And as leaders, sometimes we want our subordinates to feel connected to us, feel that we're giving them what they need. We have to be very careful, right? Like, you might be giving them what's worse for them. Like if they're big on the whole vent world or the stressing out over a client or the habit to call people dumb, you can't allow yourself to even have fun with that. And you've really got to address like what that is to them and how toxic that can be. And you got to get them to where they don't have to emotionally dump everything because they're carrying so much stress around. They understand how to process things. And so guys, as leaders, please understand you are not there to be everyone's favorite person. You're not the people's champ. Sometimes they're going to love you. Sometimes they're not going to like what you had to say or how you're guiding them, but they will respect you. And maybe in that conversation right away, they don't understand why you're doing it. But 6 months, 3 months, 4 months from then, it might sink in. And you're definitely giving them what they need, even if they can't quite see it yet.
Right,
so
some
advice for leaders out there, please keep their perspective of what your role is. And it's not always handing them their crack. And if their crack is venting, you can't always let them have that.
Mark, where can people find you, man?
Best place, Instagram, Mark Sells San Diego.
Ooh, that's of a good one.
Mark Sells San Diego.
And he does. That's a good one. And he fucking does. Yeah. What else would his name be?
Yeah. That's my team name. So if you do Porchlight SoCal or Porchlight San Diego, you'll find us on Instagram or Facebook.
Now, can you go ahead and ruin our day by showing us your quarantine view, please?
Dude, I feel like my house is a mess. Let's see. No.
Look at this.
Let me see here. So these all open up. So it's big sliding doors. We're having a storm in San Diego. And by storm, I mean it's windy and it's lower than 70 degrees.
Oh, bro.
Yeah, man.
Look at that.
Phenomenal. Hey, listen, it's almost as good as my view. I get to sit across from Eli, and he's gorgeous. So it's almost as good.
You got the Peloton. That's right, Peloton.
Yeah.
And then pinball game.
Bro, I feel like I'm looking at Tom Hanks and Big, man.
Well, I'm glad people get to see it because Eli and I are crashing there because we're actually moving to San Diego to work for Mark. So for those of you listening.
I've got three guest rooms. One is my office right now because of this whole situation. My office has been closed, but I have three guest rooms.
I need to start working on my backstroke, it looks like.
Well, hey, it's fun to show, guys, because someone has grown from the ground up, and obviously Mark's got a lot of climb in for where he wants to be personally, right? And maybe we can invite him back for where he wants to aspire to and talk about that. But it's fun to show the house. It's fun to show the view because just showing people what's possible. And don't necessarily count yourself out just because you're new, right? You've got to fall back on your qualities and what makes you different.
If I can do it, anyone can. I swear I'm not smart. Just copy everyone. I posted something about COVID today about doing virtual showings, and my buddy from San Francisco messaged me, "Hey, can I copy that?" And I was like, "Yeah, dude, I stole it from someone else."
There's just people putting out, but I promise you, there's going to be some things that are just unique to Mark that he does, and you know, with his relationships and how he can get in, you know, just talk in the financial world and bring value to some of these lenders, and then ultimately being yourself, okay, and ultimately. Putting a client first and caring for them, it's going to create an enormous amount of success because Mark, you know, the way you run your team, you and I run our team, we're having some mutual success here as far as, you know, what we've achieved. We're definitely not, you know, not alike, right? Like, I probably have more things in common with other people than you. There's a lot of differences with us, but it doesn't matter, right? Like, whatever path you climb, if we're climbing that same mountain by putting clients first and caring about your word, caring about your reputation, putting the effort behind all of those, you're going to find your own success in your own way. So definitely be comfortable in your skin. Be okay to be new. Be yourself. But a lot of the fundamentals that you copy is like, hey, do this video. Hey, yeah, you could be doing this at open houses or you could be doing this. It still requires effort. It still requires proficiency. While you're doing that video that you copied from someone else, if it's a shitty video and you have stupid things to say, it won't, like that idea that you're copying, it will not work. No. You still have to have a lot of persistence and just education and being yourself behind it in order to be successful.
Yeah.
For sure. And compound, dude. I always say, like, just keep swimming. Like Dory, she's just swimming and like, just keep going. But if you just sit in place, you're going to drown.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
So you got to keep going and just you got to keep pushing yourself. Always be educating. And that's why I think I can stick with real estate. I'm never going to leave real estate because there's always something new to learn.
There is.
There's always a new book. There's a new webinar. There's a new podcast. Always educate at least one thing a day that you master. I think is like super important to constantly do that because you can accomplish so much in more than 5 years than what you ever could imagine. And I think people put so much on like pressure on 1 year. Like, dude, just do little by little.
Yeah. 100%. And just find a way to compliment yourself and enjoy some of those smaller wins that also keeps you going through some of those hard times. But Mark, what a pleasure, man. Love having you on. I'm sure down the road, we're going to have you back on again and talking about maybe a post COVID or, you know, just where you're wanting to put your team next, what your goals are next. Maybe we'll just do it live because we'll be crashing at your house. So maybe we'll just do a podcast. I was going to say,
you might just knock on your door, man.
Come on out. Yeah. Right. There's like probably $7 flights. I know that from Denver on when it's not anything wrong. It's like 60, 70 bucks. It's cheap.
Yeah, it's not bad at all, man. But what a pleasure. Appreciate you letting us, you know, have our listeners listen to you. Hopefully your listeners can come on board and listen to some of us and our jargon. But what a pleasure, man. Enjoy having you on. Any last words for these listeners before we let you go?
No. But definitely thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, of course, man. And hang out for a second, Mark. We're going to do an outro, and then we'll say bye to you.
All righty.
All right.